Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. Today in the show, we're going to talk a little about sunflowers. No, not the weed sunflowers, the crop sunflowers. Now, if you're not a sunflower producer, trust me, we got a lot of things we're going to talk about with sunflowers that absolutely apply to every crop. And we've got the Ag PhD mailbag. We're going to get to that here just shortly. If you've got a question for us, you can call into the show, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty or Brian Hefty. I'll give you a little update on our farm and just kind of in our region here. We are having a completely different spring than we did the last 2 years. Last year in early April, we had frost still down to 4 feet deep. It's unbelievable. And this year, so as you can imagine, things started terrible, went terrible through the middle of the year, terrible at the end. It was just all terrible last year. I mean, so stinking wet in the spring. But this year, we've been warm, we've been dry. We're actually going to wrap up our soybean planting here today, other than a couple new fields that we've got where we got to do some dirt work and tiling. And then we're going to plant some silage corn. Normally, we would like to plant that silage corn just a little bit later than we do our grain corn, so it gets a little bit taller. But even planting this early with the silage corn, if we just add some gibberellic acid, it only costs like $3 an acre, then we can have much taller corn with more overall tonnage. So that rise up thing is absolutely huge. I just suggest every silage farmer out there put some rise up on and increase your overall tonnage. But anyway, we are hopefully by Saturday going to wrap up a lot of that too. So, I mean, yeah, you think about it, by early May, we'll be mostly done. And by early May last year, we were maybe 10% done. So just a big change. And overall, we're super excited for just how the year is starting. I'm not talking about crop prices. Crop prices stink. But hopefully things will rebound with that too. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, I got an email from Gary with a little bit of feedback. We had talked about using some gravel around drainage tile lines. Brian was making the comment, haven't ever done that before. Didn't really see a big need for it here. Gary said, regarding that discussion on the gravel-packed drainage tiles, just wanted you to know we had done that to protect the foundation slab of our seed plant. We've got a Finnerty silty clay soil, which you can make a nearly endless ribbon with. Our local installer put in 6-inch pipe with 1/8-inch holes. And he said the work was done in the winter. The soil moisture was minimum, but still wet. The gravel helped filter out the silt, and the holes are large enough to allow the silt into the pipe if we didn't have that. So he said another purpose of the gravel was to accumulate water around the pipe. These drains are 10 years old, still flowing, and our warehouse floor has not cracked or settled. Hey, Gary, thanks. A lot of people don't think about that we use a lot of tile in this country around foundations, and it makes a huge difference if you can control that water table.
Yeah, and I didn't say there wasn't a need, so that's, I think, what you said there. There is, but it's basically when you're trenching things in. Where we are pulling it in with a plow, that's a different deal.
All right, question from John here. He said, I'm interested in renting a new piece of land out of the 222 acres. A fair amount of it has really low relative biomass. Does low biomass mean low crop yields?
Absolutely not. Some of the very best yields in the world are raised on pure sand with almost no organic matter out there. So you can still raise a great crop. Now, if you have no irrigation and you have pure sand and no organic matter, well, now, yeah, you're probably in trouble depending on what your climate is. So unless you're going to get rain every 3 days, that could get a little sketchy.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Got a couple of questions here. This is from Aaron. This one's from Aaron. He said, was wondering if there's any slower times of the year to send Brian and Darren questions rather than when they're swamped. I don't know. That's a good question,
Aaron.
We're swamped year round. He said, but anyway, I'll ask a question. He said, I had a soils lab I've been doing business for a while, got bought out. And I figured now would be a good time to shop around for a new lab. So I sent off samples to Midwest Labs as well. Well, Midwest was pretty close with their analysis compared to my old lab, except when it came to cation exchange capacity. Midwest had the CECs anywhere between 5.5 and 8.9. And my normal lab that I'd been using was saying 15.8 to 18.1.
That's a big difference.
I'm in Oregon. We get about 60 inches of rain here, and I can build up leachable elements in I wonder if I can build up leachable elements in our soil or if I need to foliar apply them on my wheat. One of them I'm curious about is zinc. Let's see.
Okay, so let me stop right there. First of all, on this difference in cation exchange capacity, our suggestion is you call the new lab.
Right. And I got a little bit more on that.
Yeah, okay.
Let me give you that first before you make your statement. He said, our state soil survey says the ground is silty clay and silty loam, poorly drained. We put in tile at 40-foot spacing so we can still see standing water after rains, which leads me to believe we probably have higher CEC than lower CEC.
Yeah,
just kind of curious how that CEC is calculated, if they could maybe figure it out some other way.
Yeah, and it's basically how much, you know, if you look at how much of the nutrients are sitting out there, especially calcium and magnesium, then in a lot of cases you can make a calculation on cation exchange capacity. But it sounds fishy to me. If we're talking 5 to 8 CEC and water standing, something's going on. Something's wrong. And maybe it could be that the subsoil is dramatically different than the topsoil. I don't really know. But if it was me and I was having those situations, I might start taking some deeper samples. So a lot of times we talk about 0 to 6, 6 to 12, 12 to 18, 18 to 24 inches deep. You might even do a 2 to 3 foot sample, a 3 to 4 foot sample, a 4 to 5 foot sample, a 5 to 6 foot sample. I'm not saying in many spots, but in just a few spots, see what's really going on out there.
All right, Aaron also commented on cobalt and molybdenum results. We don't see a lot of tests with those on, but he's asking about numbers that we'd like to see. We'll maybe talk about that here just a little bit later in the show. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree! In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up seed treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on Ag PhD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren, live in the Morton studio today. We're talking a little about sunflower production. Before we get back to that, though, we want to talk to our good friend Scott Harms. He is with Grain PhD in Archer Financial Services. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Brian. Good afternoon.
All All right, so we've had a real tough time with grain markets lately, but just here in the last couple of days, we've seen a little bit of rebound. So what's going on right now?
Yeah, well, with all the negativity that's been going on, and any kind of sign of recovery is, you know, makes people feel good. And, you know, as with most cases, it's usually, it's not just one thing. I think what we've seen the last couple of days, we've seen a lot of people bail out of old crop sales. You know, they had some DP pricing that came due here, basis contracts also that were based off the May futures. They were coming due, and the cost to roll that forward was going to be the 9 cent carry to July, and plus your all your fees. So I think people just got a little disgusted, and you know, so we saw a lot of that selling show up this week. That feature is not going to be there today, and the market was able to bounce. Crude oil has also found some support, and these days, you know, crude oil's rallied $10 off its lows from just a week ago. You know, if you care about corn prices, you have to care about crude oil these days, and what it's going to mean for, you know, getting that ethanol production ramped back up and getting that demand back in place. It's going to take a little bit, but, you know, this is a futures market. It's looking ahead. It's expecting that there's, you know, going to be some, hopefully some positive developments there. Along those same lines, you know, we're starting to see a little bit of a reduction of the negative attitude regarding the COVID virus. We're seeing some of these economies start ramping back up again. And if things, if it goes well in some of these forward-thinking states that think they can get their economies up and running, some of the more reluctant governors like here in Illinois, you know, they're going to have to do the same thing. And I think there's a hope that by the middle of this month, that things are going to look a lot different on that side of it. So there's some of that speculative money has been flowing into prices here the last couple of days. And, you know, I think more importantly than anything right now is the reversal action we saw in corn. It's so important that we get something that kind of triggers some of these funds to lighten up on their short positions to give us that those better selling opportunities. And yesterday we had a market that made new lows, turned around and closed higher in the day, closed above the previous day's high. With the funds short over 150,000 contracts of corn, that's a real, you know, that's a real feature, and I think we saw that, you know, follow through today. That's important. If you have a reversal, we need to see follow through. And you know, for a while today, it was a little shaky. We thought we might give ground, but the fact that we were able to close strong and close on our highs, I think is it sets up well moving forward. And then it was reported at midday Chinese importers did buy, or they're expected to buy, or five cargoes of U.S. soybeans for late summer delivery. And
yep.
You know, I think that's good news for a market that, you know, we're expecting fresh supplies out of South America and maybe lose that that market. So the fact that late summer they're coming in and buying beans for delivery, I think, is a good thing. I think if you're looking for a wild card on the soybean side of it especially, or even on the corn side, you know, we're starting to see South America having to deal with some of the issues we've had to deal with the COVID-19 virus. And yep. If there's any disruption in their trucking or shipping issues as that develops down there, then that business may shift back to the U.S. And we're really, you know, that could be something, could be a white swan event for us as we move forward this summer.
Yeah, it's possible. But like when Darren and I have been to Brazil, it's so different than here in the United States. Those people will literally live in their trucks with their families. It's just crazy. So I have to imagine they're going to keep going with that, but you never know. I'm just surprised China hasn't bought more beans. I mean, when we're looking at this low a price and they're required to buy so many goods from us, why would they not buy more at this low price?
I agree, and you know, they're at least for a while there in March, their crush margins went through the roof. You know, I think they had a lot of purchases already en route from Brazil and Argentina, but they need to be getting these and on their books. And I think we can expect to see that as we move through the, you know, second quarter and third quarter of this year. And keep in mind that this trade deal is based not on our marketing year, but it's based off the calendar year. So we're really only a quarter into that. A purchase agreement, and so we expect that, you know, they should be locking it in, and maybe they're doing it. I mean, they're not going to tell us ahead of time that they're locking it in. Hopefully they're, you know, they're obviously very smart traders. You know, perhaps they are locking it in, and maybe this is a sign of things to come, but that is something that we're going to be watching as we move into the month of May. And I think that's what's going to, if it does create, if we do get that business, we need to be ready to pull the trigger. So having some orders in, anticipating that as possibly a bullish feature, that's what's going to help us out.
Well, I was telling some people this the other day. You know, really, we're lucky that we had the China deal last year with all the tariffs and everything else, because it was the worst soybean year for production we've had in 20 years, probably. And then on the corn side of things, we also were short corn last year, and we found out early enough this year, so fewer corn acres are going to get planted. So at least it's not a complete disaster. If we would have had like two or three record crops, and then we have another record crop this year, then we'd really be in trouble for price. But I think the corn market's overreacted when you figure people say, oh, yeah, all this corn goes to ethanol. Well, it does, but let's not forget a third of that is DDGs in the end, and the DDGs carry 100% of the vitamins and minerals through. All we're taking out with the ethanol process is the starch. Well, you got to feed the livestock something, and yeah, livestock numbers will be down just briefly, but I mean, they're not going to be down very long when now we got to fire up all the processing plants and everything else again, and people are still eating. So I don't know. I'm still optimistic that we're going to have much better prices by the time we get to this fall, and certainly by next spring. So, I mean, with that kind of attitude, and, you know, I've got grain to sell yet. There are a lot of farmers out there, obviously, that have grain to sell. What's your advice? What do you think that farmers should be doing? What options do they have at this point?
Yeah, well, I think you have to be, you know, it seems like in this day and age, to have a friendly or somewhat bullish opinion, you're an outlier. But I think you have to anticipate that these markets are going to recover. And traditionally, you know, we've never been in this situation before. So we look at, you know, what are typical retracement levels that the market would go back to? And we want to focus on 30% retracement. So from a pricing standpoint, on corn, a 30% retracement of the July move from the highs earlier this year to these lows of earlier this week would be a move back to around 338 basis July corn. At 50% retracement would be around 357. So as far as old crop inventories, those would be price levels that we would be looking to advance sales. Maybe let go 10 or 15% at 338, and then do a little more pricing at the 50% retracement level. The same thing in Dease corn, 349 and 365 would be those numbers. And we don't necessarily need wildly bullish information to get us back to those price levels. If we're going to have a major weather problem, you know, we may be looking at, you know, higher levels yet, a 75% retracement level. But I think as part of a plan, we need to be anticipating that at least we're going to recover 30%, very possibly recover 50%. Those numbers in the beans, we have those numbers as well, around 870 basis, no, July beans would be 30% retracement. $9 would be around the 50% retracement level. And as far as new crop pricing, you know, we want to take advantage of a move to 877 on up to 907. You know, they seem a long ways away at this point, but I think things can turn very quickly. And now is that, you know, these opportunities, you know, we're getting some rain. Now it's the time to sit down and decide, all right, where do I want to, you know, make some sales? And we have to start somewhere, and I think these retracement levels can be a good guide as we move forward. So that's what we'll be looking to do. And then you just decide whatever tool you're going to use, whether you're going to use cash or whether you use futures or maybe put on some kind of price floor option strategy. But, you know, we need to be anticipating that this market's ready to recover.
All right. Well, if you're listening today, yes, these are challenging times, but one of the best things you can do is just get more information. We'd really encourage you to check out grainphd.com. Lots of good free information there, lots of resources for you. And also you can get in touch with Scott Harms and his team through that. So again, that's grainphd.com. Scott, thanks a lot for the time today. Really appreciate it. And let's hope we get a market rally soon.
Let's go. Have a great day.
Yep. Thanks. All right, once again on the show today, we are going to talk a little about sunflower production. We've got that coming up next. We're also going to get back to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. If you've got any questions for us, just email us radio@agphd.com. Or if you'd like to join the conversation today, just call us here, 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's dual Riat control system. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is sunflower production. If you've got questions about sunflowers, if you're looking for tips on getting higher yields or just what's going on in the sunflower industry, you're going to love today's show. Our phone lines will be open throughout at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us any agronomic questions. Our email box is radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to some more of those questions here in just a little bit. Start off, though, up in North Dakota, we got John Sandbachen with us. He's the executive director of the National Sunflower Association. John, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me on the program.
You know, let's talk about North Dakota specifically. What a tough year 2019 was. A lot of guys struggled getting crops out. Now they're considering all options this year. And I've talked to more than one guy that said, wow, I might have to do some more sunflowers this year. It sounds like there's some opportunities out there for growers this season.
Well, you know, definitely. You know, we had a tough harvest season last fall with all the moisture that we got. We had a lot of rain, and then early October snowstorm sure didn't help things. And it really kind of delayed things, and we're still kind of wet in some places. But, you know, overall, the response that we've gotten from, you know, as far as adding acres this year for sunflower has been great. I mean, just super. A lot of people are looking at various options with, you know, other commodities not quite probably as profitable. And, you know, sunflowers are really shining this year.
All right. So what are some of the questions that you get on a daily basis, and what are the big topics right now as an association that you're working on?
Well, you know, I think the thing that we get a lot of topics on from producers is, you know, where are the hybrids at as far as performance, yield, things like that. how will sunflower fit into their rotation? And, you know, it fits in very well. You know, our hybrids have really advanced here the last few years. We've been doing a lot of work on, you know, enhancing yield, getting a better disease package in the sunflowers, also for insects. And then as far as rotation requirements, I mean, sunflower fits in really well after corn, especially here in the northern plains. And, you know, this year, a lot of the corn acres are still coming off here in North Dakota and in Minnesota. And so I've talked to a lot of producers lately that are looking to just, you know, put in sunflower right in behind the corn combine.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting thing as, like you say, handling those fields as that corn comes off. You've got some residue to deal with. Sunflowers do seem to be a preferred option for a lot of the growers there. In terms of fertility, this is one we get quite a few questions on with sunflowers because they can go down and find some things out there, but certainly they are very responsive to fertility inputs. We've had so many growers talk about the return on investment they've gotten fertilizing sunflowers well. Do you have kind of a place that you start with growers in terms of fertility recommendations?
Well, you know, I think, you know, it varies by location. And we've got some models that are on our website that will allow, you know, producers to look at fertilizer and, you know, to see how much they should put on given what the market price is at, to sort of kind of try to control cost, but yet maximize, you know, the return. And sometimes you'd be surprised, as you mentioned, sunflower can go down, they can reach nutrients that, you know, even corn can't reach because of our long taproot that we have. So, you know, it really varies a lot by location and profile. And one thing we always suggest is that producers do probe and see where they're at so they can kind of know what they need to do.
Jen, a lot of interest in health benefits of different crops that we're growing, and certainly with sunflowers, you get a lot to talk about there with your oil composition and more. What are some of the latest things that our listeners should be aware of?
Well, you know, demand has been really strong here the last few years. You know, one of the things we've had is we've been continuing to work down our stocks. It's because of this, the demand that we're seeing out there. And consumers are looking more so for higher monounsaturated fat top oils like sunflower because they're trying to reduce their cholesterol. And overall, they're trying to increase heart healthiness, things like that. And, you know, sunflower's profile is excellent. And we've had a lot of demand from, you know, companies that are looking to change over to a healthier type of oil. And that just increased our demand each year.
Yeah, it is fantastic. And I'm glad we're talking about sunflowers today. You talked about where they fit in the rotation. And for a lot of growers, it's been an opportunity to raise something that'll make them a little bit more money here in 2020. Talking with John Sandbachen with the National Sunflower Association. John, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. And good luck to you going into this year.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck to you also.
Thanks. Let's head over to Wisconsin. We got Tom, who farms there with us right now. Tom, how are you doing?
Great, Darren. How are you today? And Brian, how are you today?
Yeah, we're doing pretty well here. Our crops are going in the ground pretty quickly. I'm curious how it's going in Wisconsin, and also curious, what are you going to put into the mix this year for crops on your farm?
Well, as soon as I get done talking with you, I'm headed to the field to start planting corn again. And, you know, I've got barley and spring wheat and corn and soybeans and sunflowers. So that's pretty much what I've got for a mix. And, you know, usually rotate them the best, you know, to get the best yield we can and best for the soil. So that's what's going on. The small grains are all in. Should be up by now. Probably a third done with corn, so we're pretty early this year. It's kind of a nice change of pace.
Absolutely. Yeah, after 2019, we deserved a spring like this. There's no doubt about that. Now, I know when it comes to the sunflowers and some of the other crops, you're doing some different things to try to add a little bit of value there. Talk to us about some of the opportunities that you've developed on the sunflower side.
Well, all the sunflowers I grow go directly to the bird seed market. We clean them, bag them, and wholesale and retail them right off from our farm into different retailers within about a 100-mile radius. And that's gone really quite well. It's getting them nice and clean is the biggest issue. Last year, of course, my sunflowers, unfortunately, were a disaster. We had white mold was just terrible last year. We were cool and wet and high humidity, and middle of August, I would have said we had the best sunflower crop I've ever had, the middle of September. I don't think they were even worth harvesting. There was that much white mold. And I've used Contans program for the first time last year, and I know it takes a while for that to work through some of the sclerosia, but I'm really struggling on on white mold. And, you know, we're not a typical sunflower environment here.
No.
We get probably 34, 35 inches of rain a year. So, you know, that's a real challenge for me, and I'm not sure how I'm going to handle it.
You know, you think with the crop rotation that you're in, with that diversity, that would sure help. Do you have a certain number of years you like to have in between putting sunflowers out in the field?
Yeah, I try 5 years. What happens is on our heavier soils, typically our silt loam soils, if I put them on the silt loam soils, they just they grow so well that it traps everything. Of course, the white mold, this Sclerotinia sclerosa, infects them through the root on the sunflowers, so there's really not a good way that I can spray them. So I'm going to try dropping our population back a little bit this year and going on more sandy loam and loamy sands instead of silt loams, and work on that and try to spread out our rotation a little longer. But I think it's just pretty much with sunflowers, it's weather dependent and climate dependent. And we just had our lunch eaten last year on sunflowers. It was, like I say, I've grown for 20 years and it was the worst crop I ever had. So that's the bad news. And also the bad news in our county, we don't get crop insurance on sunflowers. So we just don't growing enough. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It was just a bad year for sunflowers. That isn't going to stop me. So we're going to put more in this year and keep on trying to do the best we can.
Yeah, we're sure hoping that white mold isn't as big a problem as it's been recently here with all the rainfall that we've had. How about insects, Thomas? Is that another thing that you really have to fight there? Is that a tough thing with sunflowers, or just when there aren't as many sunflower acres, does that lessen the insect pressure on them?
Well, that's the good news. I virtually have no insect pressure on my sunflowers because there's very few acres. I don't think there's maybe 400 or 500 acres total growing in our entire county. So we don't have any issues with the sunflower pest. Once in a while, I'll have verticillium will be a problem on the sunflowers, but it doesn't seem to affect the yield a whole lot. You know, the biggest thing is white mold, you know, and that same thing that affects my soybeans, of course. We really struggle with that disease. If we could figure out how to control white mold, it would really make a big difference. So if any of the crop protection companies are listening out there, I think they already know it, but that's a market that's just begging to be satisfied, and I'd be the first one in line to buy whatever they had.
I don't know, Tom. I think you might be second in line, because I think my brother might be even in front of you. He's all about the white mold control.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Get back to corn planting, and good luck.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and good luck to you folks, too, and stay safe and stay healthy out there.
Thanks, Tom. We'll be right back.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep. Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or Water Hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Talking sunflower production on today's Ag PhD radio show. And as you just heard from Tom in Wisconsin, sunflowers have some of the same challenges some of our other crops have. Like he was talking about white mold on a year where he had a lot of excess moisture. Certainly saw that in soybeans and other crops last year too. And many of the same solutions we'll talk about here in just a little bit can apply for all those crops. But want to talk just a little bit more about how they do it in other parts of the country, too. We got Clark with us right now up in North Dakota. Clark, thanks for joining us today.
You bet.
So how are things going on your farm this year?
Well, it's going pretty good. We got started here about 10, 12 days ago, and I'm 100% no-tiller, and so we're the top half inch to an inch is really, really dry, but we've got moisture down below, so we've really been hitting it hard. We've got our malting barley done, our spring wheat done, and finish up with durum here in about an hour. And then we've got a little bit of oats, 500-600 acres of oats to put in. I'll have that done by hopefully Saturday night. And then we're on to corn and soybeans.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a lot of work. And I think it's interesting just for some of our listeners that say, oh, man, I have such diversity on my farm. I have corn and soybeans. To hear all the crops that you're working with. I know my dad told me one time when I was young, I was saying something about keeping everything straight. And at that time, I think we had five crops. We had alfalfa, wheat, oats, corn, and soybeans. And he's like, oh, Darren, he said, you just need to go to some different parts of the country. You'll see what diversity is all about. So talk to me about that. Yeah. And where do sunflowers fit in the rotation in your part of the country?
We generally follow our corn stubble with sunflowers. We've done that for many, many years. It works out really nice for us. It kind of breaks up any disease that we might have, going from corn into, let's say, a small grain or a cool season grass tend to get some disease problems and stuff. So sunflowers works really nice on corn ground for us. Generally, it takes a little longer for our corn ground to dry out because it catches a little more snow, so we can do it a little bit later in the season, which sunflowers kind of like, you don't have to be out there so early. And we follow our corn stubble, but we rotate about eight different crops on a regular basis. So
now we look at central North Dakota, and there's definitely a difference between high management and lower management fields, and sunflowers certainly are very responsive to management. What are some of the keys that you would say that you just have to do if you want to have a decent sunflower crop?
Well, I think that it's so critical to get some kind of a pre-down to get early weed control. Sunflowers do not compete very well with any kind of a weed, whether it be volunteer grain or anything early on, and so to get a good pre-down and a good in season, whether you go like an express or a beyond or some different kind of a mode of a chemical mode of action other than the traditional seems to be working best up in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that pre. That's a big deal.
Yeah, if we generally do like a Liberty Link bean, and then we do an express sunflower, and then we'll do a Roundup Ready corn. And so we're using a lot of different chemicals on different times of year with different crops, you know. So every time we rotate, we throw those weeds, you know, a curveball, and we can usually stay on top of it. But I will say that the sunflowers is our weakest department. We always come back on our sunflower ground the next year with, like, my mulching barley, because, you know, we can clean up a lot of stuff in the barley that maybe we didn't do a very good job in the sunflowers.
You're absolutely right. When we can have some of those alternative crops, and then, of course, a grass crop, boy, we've got a great shot of cleaning up what we miss in sunflower fields. And, you know, we were also talking about disease with Tom over in Wisconsin. Of course, they get lots more rain than what you get in your part of the country. But, I mean, there still can be disease issues, too, that you solve by doing this multi-crop rotation. We're talking with Clark in South Central North Dakota. A little bit about sunflowers here, but it's really interesting just to hear how things are going in that part of the world with getting all these different crops in the ground. Clark, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay safe and have a great spring.
Thank you. You guys too.
Got Gordon on with us right now with a question on elemental sulfur. Gordon, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I was talking to a couple of agronomists, local agronomists, and probably the first time in the history of mankind that two agronomists didn't agree on something. Anyways, I was asking if I applied some elemental sulfur here in the next couple of weeks, would any be available this summer, or is it all, you know, going to wait until next year? And one said none would be available, and the other one thought that I would have some in July and August, so I'll check with you guys and see what your opinions are.
Well, here's the thing, Gordon. The reason why so many agronomists have so many different opinions is because of Mother Nature, number one, and number two, because we don't always have all the information.
Well, there's a lot of difference between elemental sulfur products.
That's what I'm getting at. I don't have that information. I don't know specifically which elemental sulfur product you got. So this is one of the things we talk about quite often, like at our soils clinics, where we can have two different elemental sulfurs. We'll dump them both in a jar of water, and one we get to almost fully dissolve right away, like within a few days, no problem, all done. The other one, literally, we can have it a year later, and you shake it around, and it still sounds a little bit like rocks in there. So there's a big difference between elemental sulfurs out there. So there are some products where it literally will take 5 years, and there are other products where you will get availability this summer. But here's the next thing that you need, and this is the other thing where I say we don't have all the information. You have to have decent soil life. So for elemental sulfur to change over to sulfate, there's bacteria in the soil that are going to make that conversion for it. So without that bacteria, you're in trouble. And where we see this especially is in poor drainage situations where you don't have good drainage, which means a lot of the bacteria in the soil have died, and now it takes forever, it seems like, for that elemental sulfur to convert over. In fact, if you put a bunch of elemental sulfur out there, after a while, it'll start smelling like rotten eggs out in your field. That's not good. So where I'm going with all this is test your elemental sulfur and, you know, find some different sources, but you can mix it up yourself. Just mix a little bit up in water and just see, shake it around and just see how long it takes. Come back a day or two or 7 days later, whatever, and just see where you're at. That's one of the things. Two, make sure you've got good drainage and good overall soil life in that soil. So in other words, we want relatively neutral pH. We want to be raising good crops. We want to do a lot of the right things. And if we do that, then we're going to have more of that bacteria out there. There are also some biologicals. So for example, there's a product we started using in our farm a couple of years ago called Microcycle in some of our high pH spots that helps mineralize certain nutrients. And it actually, we find that we're getting faster breakdown with that elemental sulfur. So one of the bacteria in this biological we're getting must be helping that conversion. I don't know. But all I'm saying is there are some things we can do to speed this up and make one of your agronomists right. But there are certainly a lot of reasons why the other agronomist could be correct as well.
Right. Like a yearly dosage of manure, applications on fields, would that influence that much? I would assume the biological life is going to be a little bit better there.
But here again, that could go either way. When we talk about manure, we've got more biology in there. That's a good thing. The other side of it, though, is you have more salt. So if you overdo it on the manure, now you get so much salt that it could kill a lot of that soil life. So, yeah, okay. If you do it in moderation, I agree 100%. But if you're overdoing it, that's going to be a bad thing.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, you gave me a lot of things to think about. I don't really know if I confidently know I know the answer to the question, but at least I know what influences the question.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks for the call, Gordon. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, this elemental sulfur thing, we've gotten so many questions on here in the last few years just because a lot of people hear us talk about using that in high pH soils. And so, again, what I said was if you've got poor drainage and you don't have good soil life, your elemental sulfur is going to take years, if ever, you know, to convert over to sulfate. Well, that doesn't work. So if you've got high pH, the first thing you've always got to fix is the drainage. We want to get as much soil life going there as possible, and I can promise you, you will not have good soil life if you have poor drainage. Because what happens is the water takes the place of all the oxygen, or all the air, I should say, that should be in the soil, and you need air if you want good soil life. Well, we'll continue talking about sunflower production coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio just talking sunflower production and answering your phone calls. We got Bob calling in from Indiana. Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. I hear you got a comment about my corn and soybean price thing. Now, great. You know, I'm just going to preface this, Bob, by saying keep in mind I'm an eternal optimist. I think I have to be as a farmer out here in the Dakotas. We got some tough conditions, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's always going to get better. That's my theory. But I don't think anybody could see this coronavirus thing coming and what it did to our world.
No.
But I just noticed you said you still had some corn.
Yes.
And the first 3 months of soybeans all closed over 17 cents up today, and corn, the front month of corn closed up 7. So I kind of think we turned, and corn was making lows that it hadn't made for a while, and they came off of it yesterday and turned positive. So I think we're going to be going back the other way. I bought some corn a while back, I told you, and I wrote it down, but I'm going to write it back up now.
Yep, well, let's hope you're right, Bob. We are certainly hoping for the best out there. Yeah, this the whole coronavirus thing has it's hit so many people in so many different ways. And
it's affected our whole world.
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, it was us shutting our country down. You know, let's keep in mind, when we started shutting our country down, we'd had very few cases, very few deaths, all those kind of things. This is just, it's really an unprecedented time. And I was telling my kids last night, I hope you never see this again in your lifetime. I hadn't seen it in my lifetime. And it's just, it's a terrible thing.
I'm 72 years old. I've been farming for about 50 years, and I've never seen anything like it, that something you couldn't see or touch or bite.
Now, let me ask you that quick, though, Bob. How about the polio thing? So I'm guessing that was probably when you were a kid, because my dad talked about that a little bit. He was real close to your age, and he just said, you know, his dad wouldn't let him go swimming or anything like that. They were so worried about polio then. I mean, what was the concern like then? Do you remember any of that?
No, I don't. I saw a few kids that had it back then, and I was just thinking about it yesterday. That vaccine just kind of fixed that problem.
Right.
And I think we're going to have a vaccine for this problem, but it just kind of hit us and hit us hard for a short time. And back when this all started, you know, the grains were up there around, well, we could got about $4, over $4 with a 20-cent premium on our non-GMO corn.
Yep.
And it just really slapped it around and let some of it go. And it was a little cheaper than I wanted to, but I thought I could buy it back later maybe. So I don't know. And things aren't real ideal in the growing part of it right now, because I talked to a guy, and he said his soil temperature was 52 about a week ago, and now it's 42.
Yeah,
and
it varies.
It's cold and wet. It's cold and wet down here in Indiana, so I don't know.
It varies a lot, though, you know, just from one day to the next. I mean, we'll see.
How are you guys getting along?
Oh, we're getting along great here. We'll see a 20-degree swing, though, in the soil temp at 4 inches deep. We have South Dakota State University has a weather station right on our farm, so I monitor soil temps every day year-round. And it's unbelievable the change just in a given day. If it's sunny and warm and windy, my goodness, that it really spikes. So, we're having one of our driest springs out here that we've had, well, really since 2012 and 2013.
Yeah, I agree with you. You got to put it in the ground when it's time.
Right.
And it'll warm up. It always has.
Yeah.
Unless something else changes in this world, it'll warm up.
All right. Well, hey, Bob, thanks a lot for the call today. And, we'll just kind of hope for the best here for all of us farmers.
Well, you guys have a great year and be safe.
Yep. Thanks a lot. You too.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Tom with us right now in South Dakota. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. Just talking about the weather, driest spring in a long time. We're hoping to catch a nice light spring rain anytime soon.
I know. We're kind of cautious on praying for too much rain after what's happened the last couple of years here. But, you know, with sunflowers, is this a good thing for you? When you see kind of a drier spring, do farmers start thinking, wow, I've got some pretty good drought tolerance in a crop like sunflowers?
Well, we do. But, you know, we have a good rotation in our no-till with our wheat and corn. We're in the field right now starting to plant corn. Good moisture to be planting into, but I tell you what, that spring wheat is already showing signs of sitting on top of dry ground, and nice half inch rain would just fix everything back up. So, you know, in North Dakota, they're going to start looking at planting sunflowers here in about 2 weeks, and if this drought, what looks like a beginning of a potential drought, continues, flowers are a great crop for that, and
here in central South Dakota, we probably won't be looking at planting till June. So we got a month to get along with our rain and stuff like that. But
hey Tom,
we're putting our trees down, and it's not getting good moisture to work in that way either.
No, that's for sure. Hey Tom, I got a question for you. Birds. We just had John from Pennsylvania email us, and he just asked about bird issues in sunflowers. Well, Can you talk about that?
He said he's had bird problems in his corn, and I was wondering if the same birds would be bothering sunflowers as well.
Well, I'm certain if he's got a bird that's going into a husk of a corn plant, I would think that they would go after sunflowers pretty hard also. There are places in east central of North Dakota and parts of South Dakota that they use that as one of their reasons to go away from sunflowers. They've got a lot of prairie potholes, good nesting areas in migrating blackbirds and holding those birds, and they just love the flowers. Well, that's primary market for us too, is bird food. So it makes sense. I would think that if he's got it bad enough to go after corn, that they would check on the sunflowers also.
Yep, I agree with you, Tom. Hey, now I want to ask one more question about the prees. So in no-till, I think you're doing the exact right thing. Get the prees out early so you get a little bit more time to catch a rain when you're in a dry climate like central South Dakota. Is that kind of the strategy, try and get out, get a little more window to catch that rain?
Exactly. In fact, on our Spartan for our sunflowers this year, we've made the decision to make a split application. We're out there last few days getting the first half of it down, and then closer to planting time, we'll do a second half to give that extended window. But we've got to get it out there and get it rained in. And I must say that our ground looks superb as far as weed control from last year. We finally had good moisture to activate all those chemistries, and things look up in that respect.
Yeah, it's interesting, some of the tough conditions that guys have to face that are raising sunflowers. Glad to hear that we've got some good hope that if a half inch or an inch of rain can fix everything up, we're in pretty good shape. We're talking with Tom in central South Dakota. Tom, thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today. Good luck here heading into this spring.
Yep, thank you.
All right, as we wrap things up here talking about sunflowers today, we had the question earlier about sclerotinia white mold, and I'll tell you the same thing whether you raise sunflowers or soybeans or dry beans, any crop, it's going to take multiple things. So here are the things we talk about. Take a look at your soil drainage. You may need to add tile and possibly some calcium. We want good drainage out there that helps lessen the amount of white mold you typically have. Get your soil manganese levels up. Do some soil testing. If you've got low manganese levels, get them up. We usually like over 20 parts per million on a DTPA, even much higher than that if it's a Malic 3 test. Contans, that is a fungus that literally eats the sclerotia. Now, it's expensive. You're going to spend $20-$30 an acre. But if you just put it in the spots where you have the worst white mold, Contans absolutely can work. You can put it on the fall or the spring. Pick a more tolerant seed variety, and standability is a big key too, depending on what crop we're talking about. You can go to a little wider row spacing. Again, depends on the crop. Lower planting population. There is a seed treatment called Heads Up that can be used on a number of different crops. So all those things are possible for all crops. When we get to soybeans, we usually talk about some of the early post products and things like Cobra, just to shorten the soybeans up. You can't do those things in sunflowers. But then on top of that, there are some actually pretty good fungicides out there. Endura's the best, but there's also Proline, there's Topsin. There are a lot of different products that are out there, and you might need multiple applications of fungicide. Last thing that I wanted to say with sunflowers, we really encourage you use two pre-emerge herbicides. Use a yellow plus Spartan. You've got to get great control pre, because post-emerge, we just don't have any good options.
Fun discussion about sunflowers. And oh, by the way, we started the show off with a question from Aaron. He was wondering about cobalt and molybdenum levels as well. He said he had 13.2 parts per million of cobalt. That's actually a pretty high level. That's really good. And then the molybdenum, he said, was at 0.6. We'd like to see at least one part per million on soil tests. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.